at Daisy Spark.
Welcome back, TDSers, to a brand new episode of That They See Spark. I'm Nehal.
And I'm Annika.
And today we have a really interesting topic. Maybe the word spicy is better. We're talking about hookup culture. Now, before you get your panties in a bunch, see what I did there. I'm not talking about who hooked up with who and why, but more so the concept of hookup culture, dating patterns, sexual behavior, and how apps like Tinder and OnlyFans are transforming the culture of sex.
While I'm sure that me and Nehal both have enough stories of our own to share, we've called in two people to help us talk about this topic today. Our first guest is a dating and relationships researcher and professor in New York City, Aditi Paul. She uses her dual background in tech and relationship science to examine how dating apps are transforming people's personal and sex lives. She's been featured all over Cosmopolitan, Newsweek, NBC News, Psychology Today, Business Insider, and so many more.
The reason we're having today's episode is because she wrote a brand new book on the current hookup culture, and she has so much insightful data on dating apps and hookup culture that I have to share with you all. Like, are dating apps really that popular for hookups among college students? Are LGBTQ plus students hooking up more than straight students? Is Gen Z all about sneaky links and situationships? Are dating apps risky? There's just so much to talk about.
And we also wanted to get the male perspective on this podcast. I know this is totally revolutionary for us to react to these findings with us live. So we brought in Armand, also known as Kahani. He's a producer, DJ, and founder of Non-Resident, a record label focused on growing diaspora artists. He recently launched an imprint label, Indo Warehouse, which has seen explosive growth in demand for live events. Prior to entering the music industry, he helped founders and startups go from zero to market with expertise in product design and in strategy.
So thank you both for being on our podcast today. How are you all doing?
I'm doing great. And thank you so much for that wonderful introduction and for having the male perspective on as well. This is the first podcast where it's going to be a collaboration with a human of the opposite gender. So I am very excited.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I'm just excited to dive into this. It's definitely a topic that I think... it's important that we have the male perspective in here. I know you guys have a bunch of questions, a bunch of findings. So I'm just ready to dig in.
He's easier to invalidate everything. I'm like, nope, that's wrong. Like, no.
Let's see.
Let's kick it off. Aditi, tell us what you found and we are going to have a full-on discussion of what we think.
You know, I'm painfully understanding every single day that I teach that the age gap between me and my students is just becoming a chasm right now. So this was my desperate attempt to just be relatable and use data to justify my morbid curiosity of what is happening in Gen Z. Because, you know, we've all been in college at some point in our lives and we've had our own experiences and we're always curious how the young people are navigating that landscape. So that the idea of doing this research literally stemmed from that. I was very curious about how the culture of sex is looking like in college campuses today. And you see euphoria and you think, what in the absolute fuckery is happening right now? Like, cannot relate, hard pass. And I wanted to see if that's what actually college is about. Like, do we have Maddies in college? Or like, I really haven't watched Euphoria, so I'm making all these inferences. So that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to check everything about sex, not just the fun part, but the grittier details of it as well. Like, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault, both for men and women. And some of the results were surprising, some of the results not so much. And some results just challenge the way we think Gen Z works versus how they actually work.
I agree with you in terms of feeling this giant chasm. I feel like I can't keep up and I am just in my like mid-30s and I feel completely out of touch. So I am very excited personally to hear about what you have to say because the transformation, I feel like between generations, the years have gotten smaller between generations and separating them and what people identify with now. It used to be, you know, 10 years or 20 years used to separate generations. And now I feel like 5 is more than enough to make people feel really, really out of touch with the people that are coming after them.
Yeah, I mean, my nephew, he's 13 and he's not on any of these apps. He's on Discord. Like, what is that? So I no
what
idea.
Is that? Can we ask, like, what is that? Does anybody on this call know what
I know
that
Armand
is?
Knows. Armand's
yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know about it. I mean, Discord is basically like it's an online it's a platform to make like online communities, right? So it's like if at work, if you've ever used Slack before, it's literally like that. But I think it was heavily used for like gaming purposes and like for live streaming. And then I think in the last like few years, just everyone's on it. It's really strange because I do agree that the younger generation, like kids in middle school or even high school now, they're not even on Instagram. Or in fact, they're coming back on Twitter, but they're not even on Instagram. They absolutely like stay away from Facebook, and they're sitting on Discord, just like chatting with the world.
Oh my God, what? I also think like for us, or I'm just gonna talk about myself. But when I was in college, you know, dating apps was not really a thing. You know, we met people organically at bars. We hung out with them, hooked up with them, whatever. Maybe you dated them here and there, but not really anymore. Now it's like dating apps are everywhere. So what does the data say about that?
Yeah, so the dating app popularity is huge. So I surveyed close to 318 students. To be honest with you, I surveyed 900 students, but some of them gave me such BS answers I had to like weave them out. So out of the 318,
how did you weave them out? Sorry to interrupt.
It was an anonymous survey. So like when you get the results back, you see that like some of them did not complete the survey. Some of them, when I asked them, tell me the night when or the day when the hookup happened, take me through that. Again, I assure you, I'm not a perv. I wanted to know the script that they're using to hook up because we know what the dating script looks like, but we don't know what a hookup script looks like. Like, what's the play by play? So when I looked at the answers, I saw that like half of them wrote tra-la-la-la-la or like just copped out of the survey. So you have all of these, what you call non-acceptable answers. So I had to weed them out. So I got 318 quality responses. And from there, what I noticed was 70% of students are on dating apps, sometimes multiple. But the shocking thing, which I realized, and that goes back to like their membership on Discord, that they are on the apps, but they're using a couple, which lets them foster more meaningful relationships with people who they already know. So 70% of students were on dating apps, but only 25% of them stated that they hooked up with a partner they met on dating apps. So I'm on dating apps. I'm using it recreationally. I'm using it for fun. I'm bored on a Saturday night. I need some self-validation. Let me go over here. Let me hit some guys up. Let me hit some girls up. But when it comes to even hooking up with somebody casually, they are resorting to their own social network. So a friend of a friend or a kickback from high school. Those are the kind of people they are hooking up with, which was very fascinating for me. And in order to understand how familiar they are with their hookup partners, I asked a bunch of questions. I said, how frequently do you communicate with them? Like once a day, more times, once a month, high frequency of communication. And over 70% of students said that they had mutual friends with their hookup partners. Like, and so this idea that hookups are a one-time thing, it's not that. Like they are just, I mean, in this very in a weird, funky network where they're just hooking up with each other and they're calling each other friends, but they're not really friends. And I'm like, bro, what the fuck are you doing though? Like, have some boundaries. Like, what is this? So it's like, yeah, that's the vibe Gen Z is giving.
I mean, it just feels like it's just way more acceptable, right? I think like, I don't know, a while ago, I feel like when I was in college or something, if you were going to hook up with someone, I mean, you're thinking through the possible outcomes, right? You're just like, how serious is this? Or is it not serious? Like, what is their friend circle? What's the overlap? Because if this falls through the cracks and it doesn't work out, everyone's going to either judge me or them or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel like nowadays it's just, it feels like it's more of the norm. Mm-hmm. Like you hook up with someone in your larger social network and it's not as big of a deal if like the people surrounding it know about it.
Right.
And even if it ends or it turns out poorly or whatever, it's kind of like, okay, that happened, move on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting because it's like, what was that shift? Like, people just don't care anymore. People are like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Hook up with whomever.
Yeah. And it's so funny. Like, this was not a part of research, but what I like doing is like, like talking about research to Gen Z about Gen Z. So I'm like, okay, why do you think people would be more likely to hook up with somebody they met on dating apps? So this one student, she said, well, you know, like, and exactly to what Arman's point, that is, I want to hook up with somebody on a dating app because if I meet somebody from a friend of a friend and it doesn't work out with them, then things are going to get awkward between me and my friend. Which just goes to show how much Gen Z likes community. They like friendships, and then possibly sex. So they're not willing to risk their friendships for just casual sexual encounters. They'd rather do it with like a low stake person. And that person may come from dating apps.
What I think is interesting is what Arman was saying is that whenever we wanted to hook up in college, it would be like, who's going to be impacted by this? And, you know, where am I falling into that? Where is this other person falling into that? What's the fallout going to look like essentially of all of this, if it ends up being casual versus committed, and where do we stand? But it honestly sounds more like Gen Z is taking it directly to the source, if that makes any sense. They're kind of going directly to the person, they're sort of centering that relationship, and then they're able to kind of disconnect it from everything else and do what they want, which it seems foreign, I think, to people of probably my age group, but also it's kind of commendable in some ways because you look and you think, okay, this is kind of awesome that you can take ownership of your sex life and your friendships and sort of divide them up a little bit more than perhaps we had.
I think it might be also because I think Gen Z is just like a lot more confident because they have all of these short form video types of content on TikTok, Instagram Reels, and you really see Gen Z putting themselves out there and so comfortable with themselves. Like some of the stuff that they wear, some of the stuff they say, like I cannot even imagine at that age that like I like developed over time. And so I guess maybe like they're like what you said, Annika, they're just like straightforward, like know what they want, go for it, and cut the bullshit out. We be here playing games since like 2014 or something.
There's like a beauty behind it, but I think like there's also a lot more accountability, right? With everything being on Instagram and all these different apps, I think like it just feels like if you meet someone and let's just say things get sour, like there's a lot more mediums to actually share your experience, which holds each other, you end up holding each other a bit more accountable. Like back in college, you kind of do have to tiptoe around these things because there wasn't any way to express yourself besides like literally verbally with your friends.
Yeah. Can I burst your bubble a little bit? I mean, I love the fact that Gen Z, kudos to them. I love them so much. They have made depression cool. They've made stretch marks cool. Like they've made abject, just nonsense cool on TikTok. I'm living for it. Like, you know, people are out here just crying and just being our whole messy selves. Like, you know, who doesn't like that? Especially as millennials who grew up with the Kardashians and just wanting to look perfect and always serve a look and a vibe on Instagram. Like, fuck that. Like, we just want to be deranged. Love that about Gen Z. At the same time, they have become an extremely non-confrontational generation. Like they live in the fear of being canceled. So accountability to a very toxic extent, right? Like you just have to pick a camp and you just have to stick with it. So they're finding out very non-confrontational ways to like cancel their relationships. So just, I mean, and these are terms that I have learned as I've done the research. I have no idea what these terms mean, like breadcrumbing, orbiting, zombieing. Annika, you're confused. I'm confused as well.
Oh,
so orbiting is if you like, does anybody want to chime in on what is the meaning of orbiting?
Like you like just fester around the person until you slowly like disappear. So, I don't know.
They're okay, listen, ghosting has become like a very definitive thing, right? I mean, I'm just like
ghosting.
Like, so they'll be zombieing a lot, and orbiting is like, you hooked up with this person one time, right, in your dorm room while eating a bunch of Cheetos, and then you add each other on social media, and then you have no connection, but you see this person seeing your Insta story. Now, what does that mean, right? So, like, that is you being in the orbit of the solar system of this human. So, 80% of students added their hookup partners on social media. And out of those 80% of students who added their partners on social media, 68% ghosted their partners and 53% were ghosted. So, like, you're ghosting them, but you've added them on social media. So, like, it's a weird energy where this leads to things like situationships, right? Where this leads to things like lack of boundaries, like are we not, like, extremely messy. So I think in terms of like being definitive or like holding a stand, Gen Z is highly anxious because they're so accountable to the point that they don't want an opinion, right? Like, they don't know who they're going to upset. And that is manifesting in these ways where you're adding them, but you're orbiting them, but you're ghosting them as well. You have a romantic interest in them, but not acting on it.
Did you, back when you were in school, Armand, did you ghost people, and ghosting meant you didn't follow them on Instagram, or was ghosting equivalent to this orbiting thing that you just talked about?
No. So I know the first time I ghosted someone, it was like way after college.
Canceled immediately.
Canceled.
Like, I remember that because it was like, I had like just met someone and like we had hooked up once, and then basically I was on a trip. I wasn't feeling well, and she had messaged me. I was like, oh, I'll get back to her. Like, I don't really know what to say. And then the next day, I was like, oh, I'll get back to her. I'm not feeling well. And then that turned into, like, animosity from her end. And I was like, oh, shit, I don't know how to handle this right now. I'm going to get back to her tomorrow. And at that point, I was like, I don't understand this energy. I don't know how to do this. And time went on. And literally, like, week after week, this thought would be in my head, like, shit, you know? Like, I just... This is ghosting. This is exactly what ghosting is. Shit, I'm a ghoster. I just ghosted somebody. It felt like shit. I admittedly never followed up. That was the one time I like properly ghosted. But like you just said, 68% of the 80% ghosted, which is insane, because that just means that a massive amount of people are just left hanging, like without any knowledge whatsoever. I'm all for moving towards transparency and actually like real communication, which, I mean, the younger you are, I guess like you're still developing that and learning that for yourself. But I would assume, or I would hope, that like Gen Z is able to take in that knowledge at a much earlier age. It depends like when they're going to act on it.
Gen Z's application of all the things that they're able to take in is still kind of flawed, not only because they're still learning, but also because the situations that they're all in now because of that sort of tiptoeing and the eggshell walking is definitely effing with their ability to actually like apply all of the knowledge that they're having about being transparent and being open and putting their tears out on social media and being open about things. And all these things that could be utilized and harnessed for good are still sort of, they're still figuring it out. They're still sorting out how exactly to put that into practice with partners, with hookups, with circles of friends, with boundaries, whatever. So it's not, you know, like you said, Aditi, it's not going to be very neat. I think it is going to blend for a while until either cancel culture and stepping on eggshells kind of fades away, which I'm not sure it will, or if they just get their shit together.
It's less of a generational thing, more of an age thing. Like, how messed up were we when we were 18 to 24? Like, I was just a ball of awkwardness. And yeah, I mean, objectively, millennials were at a more liberal generation than my parents. But my mom was still more sexually liberated than me. Like, she was very self-assured. And in comparison to that, I was not because I was conservative, but because I just didn't have experience on my side. I knew like the culture was liberal, but like for me to step into the liberalness of the culture really did take some of those awkward hits, and that only comes with age.
In our sphere, in the South Asian sphere, right? You know, when we ask the question of, like, why is there such a high percentage of ghosting and comparing it to back when we were in college, the South Asian circles are so tight and cliquey and a small percentage of a campus. Like, when you typically hang out in those circles, how do you avoid said person that you're ghosting? Like, you can't. So I'm curious, like, in this study that you did, like, it wasn't just South Asian, right? It was just all Gen Z. So I'm curious how that changes things as well.
So there is, and it's such a different experience, you know, and from gaining from my experience, like, I objectively avoided hooking up with anybody from the South Asian community, because it, just for the same reason, like you said, it's very clicky, rumors fly around, and you're just stewing in your own filth at that point. Like, I don't want to do that, especially if it's going to be short term. There's something called, and I was doing my research to understand, you know, there's a huge debate if white students hook up more than sexual minorities. And there are two camps of thought. One says that white students do hook up more than sexual minorities. And the other camp thinks that sexual minorities hook up more than white students. Now, when they say that sexual minorities hook up less than white students, and this has been found in research where professors Eaton and Rose, they compared and contrasted the sexual behaviors of Hispanic students and white students, and they saw that Hispanic students were less likely to just hook up and foster short-term relationships compared to white students in primarily white institutes, so PWIs, because of what exactly you said, that is, because racial homophily is such a big thing, and it's hard to get people of the same race if you prefer that. So from the small pool of people who you do have, you don't want to mess it up by just hooking up with everybody, you know? So you want to see it through. So the tendency of sexual minority students, of fostering traditionally long-term relationships more than white students versus just randomly hooking up has less to say about their sexual conservativeness and more to say about the fact that they just have a smaller pool of people to work with. And you cannot be flagrant with that. And you also are working against a stereotype which has pitted you as this sexually promiscuous human being, especially for Black students, right? So you're the visible minority. Everybody thinks that a Black woman is promiscuous. And then if she's in a primarily white institute and she does hook up like her white peers, she is more likely to gain a reputation than her white peer. So she will avoid that. So it's much less to do with our sexually liberal versus conservative attitudes and more the societal forces that we have to deal with.
That's so interesting to think about. I think another stat that you had mentioned in your study that I read about, which has to do with this sexual liberation topic, was around like sexting. So I know you did some surveys around sexting, and I don't know, me personally, I think Snapchat was a thing when we were in college. People were like Snapchatting some dirty pics, but I don't know about sexting back in my time.
Yeah, sexting has become a huge thing. And, you know, that could be one of the reasons why students don't like jump into sex, because there's so much sexual primer that's happening before the actual sexual act. Like, you know, you have thirst traps and you have sex. Yeah. you do a soft launch of the sexual, things that you are going to do with them. So there's a lot of sexual communication that's happening. And I saw that students who sexted had a higher chance of escalating their sexual encounter than students who did not sext. So if you don't sext and you're getting together with your hookup partners, you might just keep it at making out. Versus if you have sexted before, the chances of you having penetrative sex and unprotected penetrative sex, much higher.
Hi, listeners. It's me, Anika. And as you know, That They See Spark has over 120 episodes and more than 20 have surrounded mental health.
If you've been a longtime listener, you also know that we both have struggled with mental health at different points in our lives. I can honestly say talking to my therapist about the things stressing me out in my daily life makes me a better person.
I signed up for online therapy in February of 2020 to cope with some breakup damage. And I continued through the pandemic stress, engagement nerves, marriage adjustments, job transitions, and now new motherhood challenges. To say it's been life-changing has been an understatement.
That's why we are sponsored by BetterHelp, to give you 10% off your first month and access to online therapy services so you can be supported without stigma.
BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can access a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. Just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy, and BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then you talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call.
You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, you can switch to a new one at no additional charge. With BetterHelp, you get the same professionalism and quality you expect from in-office therapy, but with a therapist who is custom-picked just for you, more scheduling flexibility, and a lot more affordable pricing.
Get 10% off your first month at www.betterhelp.com/thatdaisyspark. That's betterhelp.com/thatdaisyspark. I think I'm just going to be calling sexting from now on the soft launch of foreplay and that's, sex, period.
That's exactly right.
From now on, it's always just going to be called the soft launch.
But that makes sense, right? Like, if you're going to be more openly communicative about, like, what you want or what you're looking for or what you're looking to do, then when you actually meet the person, boom. Like, there's just, like, especially, I mean, if there is that sexual tension, you're just like, all right, I want it, you want it, let's go. But if you don't talk about it, then when you meet, you have this, like, you know, hours of talking and looking at each other and, like, basically, like, shoulder to shoulder. And then you're just like, oh, who's going to go first here, you know?
What about, like, social media and, like, photos and videos or sending stuff like that? But did you see anything in your surveys around that?
I was just trying to look for this one quote about this kid. I don't want to be condescending and call them kids. This very super, super young adult. And this person said, we had been texting and Snapchatting every day. We set up a date a few days later in the week. We ended up meeting up at a bar before the setup date and talked for a while with each other and friends. We decided to go back to my place where we proceeded in awesome sex. So Snapchat is playing a role as a primer for you to have sex, but then there are places where you're just taking the snap to, like, sustain communication. So this other straight female said, we were at a house party that got busted by the police. When we were leaving in a big group, a bunch of people suggested we get food. At the place we were eating, we talked and he asked me for my Snapchat. We were both drunk and wide awake and wanted to talk more. Everyone else wanted to leave, so he suggested I come back to his dorm, and I said sure. So so she said sure, and then she went for it. So Snapchat
is, Snapchat is definitely something that, you know, it's the less commitment version of texting. So texting seems a little too real, like I might want something more formal with you or want to go on a date, but Snapchat is like, oh, I could just send you a picture of something random. But I do think, given my experience with Snapchat, like, definitely when you're Snapchatting someone back, especially a boy that you like, I'm like trying to get ready before my Snapchat and everything. I'm like, I hope I look good.
Just for that one picture. Thank God
for
filters.
One, like...
Thank God for filters. I am here for it.
You mentioned one thing that was really interesting in some of your research as well, going back to conservative and liberal attitudes, that gay men are most sexually liberal and straight women are the most sexually conservative in areas like masturbation and porn consumption.
Yeah, I mean, I am a straight woman and we had to take a collective L on that. Like, what is happening, straight women? We are not watching porn. We are not masturbating. Guess what? We are not orgasming. And our oral sexes are not being reciprocated. Like, it has become a concerted decision to stay straight at this point. Like, there is no winning.
I have a question for you. Were men more likely to give oral sex or women more likely to give oral sex when you did these surveys?
What do you think?
I mean, I feel like that's pretty obvious. Yeah.
Yeah, and
you
know
what? I was just
wondering
if that's still a thing, though. Is that still a thing?
It is. It is a thing.
Still more down.
It is a thing. 44%. So, like, I asked students, "Did you go down on your?" I mean, I asked them a list of sexual activities that they did, and they had to check those off. And these are like sexual activities that NYU professors, they created the scale and I just copied it. And it was so graphic. Like if somebody just, it's almost easy to have sex than to talk about sex, right? Like, so they had to, poor children, they had to check off boxes and the boxes said breast stimulation and like, you know, oral sex and anal sex. Like I asked them a variety of questions where they had to check off all of the things that they did. So two of those items were I performed oral sex on my partner and my partner performed oral sex on me. And the results show that straight men said, 44% of straight men said their partners performed oral sex on them and they too performed oral sex on their partner. 19% women said that it was reciprocal. So reciprocity of oral sex extremely low for straight women.
That's terrible.
This is for hookups.
And compare this to LGBT women, we got to give it up to them because 80% of LGBT women said that their oral sex was reciprocated and they orgasmed in their last hookup. Like, Armand, what is happening with your gender, man? Like,
I'll let you speak right now.
I don't even know because that's just unfair. That's just not right. I mean, like, I think like generally, I was having a conversation about this not too long ago because one of my friends as a female mentioned that like she didn't get any, right? She gave oral sex, but she didn't get any. And I was like, that's insane. Why not? Like, wouldn't you guys like hooking up the whole weekend or whatever? And she was like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it doesn't make sense. Like I did that twice and I thought I'd get something. And I'm just like, I'm thinking about it more. And I'm just like, I was trying to process like how often straight men are kind of, and these are assumptions, which actually you may have more stats on, but like the assumptions that I have are like a lot of straight men create anxiety, performance anxiety for themselves. And they actually leverage this like notion of how quickly can I like reach a climax with this person? And usually for men, that means that they're gonna orgasm and then be useless for a bit. and then the women are just kind of like, all right, dude, like, what about me? And I always like personally, I don't understand why, like, even if I can understand, for example, if you just met the person, right, and you're just becoming comfortable with them, it's kind of natural to have some level of like, okay, we haven't like connected at the root yet. Like we're not grounded people together yet. So you're exploring, but if that is lopsided, then like you're doing the whole act a disservice.
I think like a lot of times when you're hooking up with a guy, you know everything that you're supposed to do. There's one thing that you got to make do one thing. But with women, there's a lot more communication involved. You need to ask questions and you don't want to come off like you're telling someone what to do too much just to like feel pleasure, which is a shitty way to think. But like, you know, when you're hooking up, you're not like, oh, let me just tell you what my favorite thing is or how to do it. Because then you're like, am I talking too much? Am I telling them too much what to do? And so I think with men, it's easier because there's only like one thing that you need to do versus women. You really need to talk to them and communicate with them.
I would play devil's advocate on that. So I think that I would disagree. I think that I don't believe that at all. I think like men there's way more that like to like a man and a woman, let's say, we're straight in engaging in this. If the guy were to be more communicative and actually say like, hey, like kiss my neck or bite my lip or like, you know, hold me this way or whatever. But dudes are just often like way too masculine and like their ego is up. And so they're just not going to be like that because when they watch porn, the actors in porn don't do that, right? The actors in porn are like just insanely testosterone driven, like animals. oftentimes, like statistically, what people watch is not what sex should be.
No, I agree. But that's actually really interesting to think about. Like, I think maybe that's my assumption that I had. I'm like, okay, it's so much easier for you because you have like one thing that you like. But maybe, yeah, maybe they just don't say anything.
Like, I would only imagine that if, again, it comes down to communication. Like, if two people were actually were to be open with each other in what they're looking for when they're like in bed, for example, even if they're new to the hookup or whatever, it can go such a long way because most people just don't talk. And then there's so many assumptions made. And even for women, right? Like if a guy is trying to please a woman, that said guy is like going off of his prior experiences, but everyone is different. So you're not asking, you're making a bunch of assumptions, and that couldn't work for this person. And at the same time though, that same rule, I think, should apply from the other side as well.
You know, something that I totally understand what Arman is saying. Like, what I hear you say is that if there's just more communication, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but like you're saying, okay, there are certain social forces that like the man is just too proud or not programmed to or conditioned to not ask for directions, right? Just like you don't ask for directions when you're driving because it's like take on masculinity. The same way I'm not going to ask for directions. And the social script is that men need to initiate. And that exactly what happened in heterosexual relations in Gen Z as well. When I asked them who initiated sexual encounters and they said the man. So you almost want, on one hand, you want the man to know, right? So you don't want to say it to him, you just want him to know. So that's one power play that's happening. The other power play that is so evident and we don't talk about it enough is how confusing female sexual desire is. And I'm not blaming it on us. It is how the world is worked or warped, where we just don't know what we should want or what is allowed for us to want. Like, think about it. When we say, yeah, consent is great, like we have to say what we want. Well, do we know what we're going to have for dinner? Like, it's desire is always growing. It's manifesting. It emerges. It's not a checkoff list at a sushi restaurant where you just say, I'm going to have nigiri and uni and that's what you get, right? If you are with a person and you wanted to kiss, but now the sexual tension is so high that you want to escalate it, how is one to give consent? I'm like, okay, now I want you to escalate it and give me oral sex. That shit doesn't work. But think about it on the other side, where if women are asked to vocalize their sexual desire in this heat of a moment, let's take it on a non-sexual context. Are women allowed or given the space to vocalize or be assertive in non-sexual spaces? Where we are more conditioned to think that, oh my God, I don't need to be assertive. So we use statements like just, I don't know, hedge. So in non-sexual contexts, we are taught and are punished or rewarded for being non-assertive, and all of a sudden you switch it into this sexual mode and we are like, boss ass bitch, right now I'm going to tell you exactly what I want. Well, we don't think like that. The man doesn't think like that. So who benefits at the end, right? So
and more so our culture. You just talked about one aspect, but think about South Asian culture and the entire role that it has on us being sexually liberated or us not feeling shame or guilt when we talk about sex or, you know, think about our bodies in a lovingly way. Like, you know how far we've come to just accept ourselves, given like norms and everything.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it is. So Arman, you're completely right. I mean, I understand where you're coming from when you're saying like, I don't know how female sexual desire works. To be honest with you, even we don't. because the world is filled with mixed messages, and we cannot just pretend that sexual consent is women saying yes and that's how it's going to be.
Absolutely. I mean, again, it just comes down to like, if people were better communicators, we're veering in that direction, but there's also so many forces that stop us from that. Oftentimes I think in the bedroom, for guys, it's often ego. But like, I do think that, like men get validation from seeing the person they're hooking up with, like experiencing pleasure. Right. So for a guy, this is from my experience. Like if my partner at the moment is like responding in a positive way, right, to something that I'm doing, then I'm like, okay, like that's a good feeling, right? That's a validating feeling. And so you're possibly going to like double down on that, see where that goes, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're not even cognizant of those things and you're just jumping the gun, being like, oh, I'm supposed to like rip her clothes off and just like, you know, turn her over and do this, that, whatever, and then finish and be like, all right, good night. What, I mean, you're not creating a connection. You're not doing anything for both of you. And realistically, the other person hasn't been pleased at all. So you're just insanely selfish.
I mean, going along with that, Armand, you were saying like, if you're looking at someone and you're trying to create a connection. So I think that if you're looking between gender dynamics, for females in particular, who are willing to go down on their partners or who are willing to give pleasure to their partners, it probably is more along the lines of creating a connection of some sort, making sure that the other person is pleased, making sure that there are other people whose needs are met, because you're often conditioned to do that. But then on the opposite side, it often seems like with men, it's, hey, I'm doing this thing and it's making me feel better because it looks like she's kind of responding, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that guys are going in because, oh, this is actually working. Let me try and explore that. Let me ask if it's working. Let me ask if she's really liking that, you know? And it's a lot of just like, I'm hammering away and she kind of vaguely looks like she might be enjoying it and she might be faking it. I don't really know. But if it makes me feel good and I look like I'm making her feel better, then, you know, let's just keep carrying on with it and finish up quickly. And it doesn't necessarily have that same reciprocity or the same connection that is going the other way around.
Yeah. If more guys like whispered in their hookup partner's ear, like, how is that? Or like, is that good? And the person said, yeah, it's great, but can you go down an inch? Like, you know how much of a world of a difference that would make, right? But those questions aren't even asked. And I mean, I do think it's important if the question is asked, the person who's answering does have to ideally answer honestly and not kind of be like, yeah, it's good. Like if it's not good, just instruct them. Because hopefully, like if the intention is the person's asking, then ideally they want feedback and like it's going to get better so much faster.
Yeah. It's, and I totally understand what you're saying, Armand. Let me play the devil's advocate right now. The devil does not need an advocate. I'm not going to do that. It's when you're talking about, you know, if the other person just says it would be so much better. Kinda sounds like in terms of reporting sexual assault cases, right? Where if the other person just spoke up, right? Like, why don't you speak up? Why don't you do it? I'm taking it in a very dark angle and we don't have to take it, but I'm curious to know what you think about it, right? Because when things like, grittier things like this happen, we're like, what if you just speak up, right? Why don't you just tell somebody? But the question is, what happens on the other side when you do say it, right? And I'm not putting you in the position of like, you are representing the 50 billion people who are straight men. I'm not doing that. But I'm asking you to entertain the thought that, but why don't we do it, right? So there's this amazing book called Faking It by Lux Alptrum, where she says, it's not a lie that women lie, right? I mean, we fake orgasms, right? We are lying through our teeth everywhere. But the question is not like if we lie. It's why we lie. Why is it that women lie? Why is it that we say it's not that bad when it is that bad? What are these forces that are enabling this kind of behavior? And it goes back to something which I read in a book. It's an amazing book. I encourage everybody to read this. It's called Tomorrow Sex Will Be Good Again, where the author talks about this thing called the steam boiler model of male sexuality, of why don't women say yes? Why do women say no gingerly? It's because there's this invisible narrative in our head where if a guy is charged, we feel like we have to see them through, right? So one of my friends, she said, you know, she was feeling this guy, and they were in grad school together, and she brings this guy back to her apartment, and they were drinking wine, and this guy thinks that, yeah, he's going to get some. And then he starts like really feeling her up. And she's like, wait a minute, you know, I mean, we're not there yet. But he felt so entitled to sex that she had to go along with it. And like, it's only now that she's realizing the fact that, yo, that was date rape. So I understand what you're saying, and I respect that. And I really do hope that more men say, create the space for women to say, you know what, babe, like, let's move an inch to the right. That's where the spot is, you know, and create that safe space where people can say that, and for the other party to not take it as an invalidation of their sexual competence.
Yeah, like when it comes to awareness, for the case you just mentioned, right? Like, what I would hope is that, like, I see a clear difference in like being aware versus being actually conscious of like what you're doing. And so the difference would be like, okay, yeah, because of the larger focus in the media, and there's a like bigger spotlight on what's been happening. It's like, okay, guys can be more aware. But in terms of how they're acting, right? Like, if they're acting out of fear just because they're like, if I do this, I might get in trouble, versus if I shouldn't do this because it's not right. Like, there's two very different schools of thought. And so, like, you can be aware, but if you're, it's about the intention, right? Like, in that case, like, that person could have been aware that, like, you know, people are talking about like, I can get in trouble, but clearly like his intentions were, it doesn't matter. Like, this is what I want right now. And so, yeah, I would hope that it's, you know, more people are, it's not just awareness. It's like, you actually have to understand like the meaning behind it. And like, why are you acting this way? Because like, if you act like that once, how often is it going to happen in the future?
You mentioned one thing tying into sexual assault. Actually, Aditi, you mentioned 16 to 27% of students who hooked up with someone they had met through school reported lower to higher order sexual assault.
Yeah. And can I tell you something surprising? A majority of them were men. Isn't that surprising?
Get out. Really?
That is surprising.
I honestly thought that I did something wrong with the data, where I'm like, 1 in 5 men are saying that they experience lower to middle order sexual assault. Like, this must be wrong. And this just goes back to what Arman was saying, that there is an awareness among men, among society in general, where we have gotten better at navigating this precarious land of sexual assault. There was this like study that was done recently where people are now less likely to blame a victim for drinking alcohol when she or he was assaulted. So this consciousness that we have that just because you are drunk or are inebriated does not give another person the right to violate you. Like, how great is that? Like, that's such an optimistic result. And so this result was very shocking to me, because I'm like, This is new. And I thought that mine was the only study that has found this result, which, I mean, I went too far ahead patting myself at the back. But there are studies out there that have shown similar results. For example, there's this great book called Boys and Sex by Peggy Orenstein, where she talks about how hypermasculinity affects men negatively. Because men, as well as straight women in heterosexual relationships, think that men are just dildos with a human attached to it. Like, they are going to be up for sex all the time. We don't need to ask for their consent. And when we don't need to ask for their consent, one, because they are the ones who always lead sexual activities. And secondly, if I am touching you without your consent, if I am leading into you and kissing you, that's not me assaulting you. That's me with my sexual empowerment, right? I'm a, I'm channeling my Megan Thee Stallion energy. So, and that puts men in a very precarious situation because they feel violated, but they cannot entertain that thought because the inner voice goes, well, at least I got sex. Why am I being a whole ass bitch? Like, why are you complaining about that? So here is this person who's completely violated, and we're asking this person to respect my boundaries. How is this person going to know? Right. So again, to create that safe space of being respectful, honestly, dude, like it comes down to just being respectful of each other.
Wait, there was like an episode on this new reality show called Ultimatum. I don't know if you guys are watching it. It's really crazy. Yeah, but basically one of the guys on the show told this girl that he wasn't attracted to her because she was trying to, you know, kiss him or make out with him. And he just said, oh, I'm not attracted to you like that. And she flipped the script on him and went to other people and said, he's so rude. He said that I'm not attractive. And he said that like that. And she took a hit also, what you were talking about, Armand, ego. So it was her ego that was deflated by him just actually being forward and saying, I'm not into you. I'm not attracted to you.
There's a lot of societal pressure on guys, like even like socially, right? Like amongst their peers to be like, oh, like, you know, this girl hit on me and like, let's say in that case, like, you know, made a move on him. There's a lot of pressure for that guy to go with it because if he said no, it's like, you know, you're going to get a bunch of your friends being like, dude, what's wrong with you? This, that, whatever. I would hope there's less of that, but I can easily imagine that there's just a lot of dudes and friends who act like that, who are just, that's what it's about, right? Body count. Like, What really is that? What is that doing for you? Nothing.
Yeah, it's just a weird space. I don't know if like if you have time, but like this is an account of a 19-year-old straight male, and I asked him like, tell me about a time where you know, you were uncomfortable in a sexual scenario, and it can be a minor discomfort. It could be a major discomfort. And this is what he said. So this guy said, junior year of high school, I had been talking to a girl. We broke things off and she eventually wanted to get back together. I declined. She was my brother's girlfriend's best friend. One day she guilted me into giving her a ride to my house where my brother and his girlfriend were. I felt uneasy about being alone with her, so I made it clear that nothing would happen. We were at my house. She followed me upstairs and got on top of me. I told her I didn't want what was happening. I let it progress further than what I initially wanted. I stopped her in the middle of us having oral sex and just walked out because I felt bad telling her no, and I didn't want to hurt by pushing her off. This is a straight male talking. Who is he going to talk about this to, right? So, and he's going to carry this in his formative years, and who knows how this behavior is going to fester later on in life. This conversation became real deep. You thought you were just going to talk about orbiting, but here I am telling you the grittier details of hookups. But, you know, I mean, I really don't want hookups to sound at this like extravagant, the laissez-faire sexual rendezvous that kids are having, to like give everybody a realistic view of like, yeah, have sex. You have all the agency to do that, and also understand that you have to navigate this minefield of sexual consent and assault as you do it.
I love what you said. Like, that's so true. I feel like that is kind of the big takeaway from today's episode. But I want to also open it up to the floor to give everyone a chance to give final thoughts. Armand, what did you think about some of the data that was brought up today, or just our conversation?
So one thing I quickly wanted to touch upon was what is the definition of hookup?
Should
we all say our definition?
Yes, please. I was
curious.
Gonna say, like,
okay, let's start with you, Armand.
No, you had to start with me. What is the definition of hookup? I'm still figuring it out. Connecting with someone on like with some physical intimacy, but it that like I don't define it as like needing to meet like a certain level. Like it could be making out, it could be more, it could be okay, maybe not like cuddling, but like, you know, it's not very like strictly defined. it's like more so I physically connected with someone in some way.
Okay. How about you, Aditi?
See, I have the answer. Like, I don't want to be the cocky person who's like, let me tell you what it is.
Okay, wait. Then you go last.
I'll go last.
I think hooking up is just making out. When someone says, I'm hooking up, I'm like, okay, I think you made out. But that's just how I've been trained, like, my entire life. So that's what I think. But nowadays, I'm like, did you have anal sex? Did you have a threesome? Did you, like, what did you do? Because I don't know what it means. But to me, when I say hooking up, or someone says hooking up, I just assume it's making out, unless they said, no, we had sex.
So, like, okay, wait, okay, all right. So, like, would it be what is the purest form of hookup? Like, if you just hook up once, right? And, like, that's what we think, that a hookup is you hook up one time with a stranger, you do something sexual, and it means nothing. That's what we think a hookup is. But now, given that Gen Z and their, need for hooking up with the same person again and again, so this is the definition of a hookup. So a hookup is a sexual encounter, usually lasting only one night between two people who may be strangers or acquaintances. Some physical interaction is typical, but may or may not include sexual intercourse. Examples of physical interaction include kissing or making out, breast simulation, and genital touching. So if you need it.
So yeah. So I was kind of right.
You're totally right. You're absolutely, both of you are totally, totally right.
Yeah. Good job. High five.
Credit. Yay.
But that's interesting that it's defined as a singular thing, because I hear it often, and like, you know, you hear it in context. Oh, I'm hooking up with this person, which means that like they hooked up once, but then they're continuing it and they don't know where it's going to go. It's somewhat casual. They're like labeling it as casual. But now here's the tricky part. I think in more so now than ever before, we're like constantly blurring the lines between hooking up and dating. We're like, what is that next step? We're like, when does it get weird? Or when do we stop and ask ourselves, like, what are we doing here? I see that more and more.
And I think one of the things that we said in our other podcast episodes is like the reason that a lot of people in our generation keep like looking for something better, and that's why the hookup and dating lines are blurred, is because of dating apps. You're constantly scrolling, you're constantly meeting new people, you're constantly finding flaws in the person you're with in order to find it in someone else, thinking of a way to find that person that will fulfill this checklist. And so, honestly, our generation is fucked, and that's my conclusion.
I mean, yeah, like, everyone says that, for example, about, like, New York dating culture, for example, because in New York, right, because in New York, you just have, like, in New York City, you have, what, like, 8 million people, and so you're just, like, it's kind of human nature at this point, especially with all the distraction noise that we have with like social media, et cetera, that you meet someone and they could be a great human that you connect with, but there's this like inner voice that for some reason is like, this person's great, but like, what if there's more? Now you just found this person. You don't know the rest of the world. And I think that is going to eat us alive.
In our deathbeds, we'll still be like with the phone, right, swiping.
Hello, is there something better? And that's why also my friends all say that they think in our generation, and this is not backed from by data or anything, they think in our generation cheating is very prevalent because of that. Because you could be married, you could be dating someone, but like the second you find someone new, it's like those urges that you have of like wanting to be with them. And so we've seen that play out before in different people and stuff, but they, from what my friends say, they think this is why this generation is more going to be known to cheat and stuff.
Moral of the story, we are just royally fucked. So good news, everyone. The only good thing is that we are collectively fucked. So,
well, then like the question becomes like, how do we
unfuck ourselves?
How do we do that? Right. How do we actually like educate or help all of us, including like millennials, be better communicators? Because I think, I mean, that's the core thing I keep seeing, but like whether it's communication or other things, how do you get people to like be more grounded and be confident in themselves? I mean, this I don't think we can answer this right now, but
no, but like, I do think a good starting point, honestly, as selfishly as it sounds, is like listening to this podcast, hearing our perspectives, also talking to your friends about it. Have this kind of open conversation in your friend circles, in your friend groups. And, you know, like you said, Armand, maybe talk to your friends next time you are in a situation that you're not like wanting to go forward with a girl, and like make that the more like normal way to do life versus being like, okay, I'll just go through with it. I just don't think we talk about it enough to this depth. But yeah, on that note, I do want to say, but thank you both for being on our podcast, That They See Spark. For our listeners, you can follow us at They See Spark. You can also follow our amazing guests. You can follow Armand on at Kahani Music. And you can follow Aditi at I Am Aditi Paul on Instagram. So connect with them, share this episode with your friends, keep the conversation going, and we'll see you next time.